Ciò we need to start. We seem not even to. I came along with the Honorable Sosibo Echina. She went out. I'm sure one should take an opportunity to welcome all of you present in this meeting. But more importantly, Honorable Lee, who is going to make a presentation after our first item. You are welcome, Honorable Member. Without much ado, Member Sui, we did receive the communique coming from the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disability, which they are indicating to us that they have scheduled a joint meeting with the Women, Children, Persons with another, what do you have? Select committee, I'm sure, from the NCOP to consider their proposals from Honorable Dudley that dealt with the Termination of Pregnancy Amendment Act that she forwarded to us. So I'm sure in a due course we'll then get the report after the joint meeting in which they would give an indication as to what is their feeling. Our business today, it means we will be looking at both submissions that we received from Honorable Self and Honorable Delil sometimes at the beginning of the year. We are today going to deliberate and possibly arrive at the determination as to what is the feeling of the committee. You would recall that every time they're making presentation, I appeal that we should not go into the deliberation, but get clarity seeking questions. Now today, it is a day for all what you have been holding for some time. I'm going to open this for you to start discussing as to what do we have to do in terms of this presentation. I'm sure, as I've been informed, that we don't even make a quorum as we are supposed to. That therefore, for us to wait for a person not doing anything, we need one more person before we can arrive at that decision. For us to wait while working, I would rather then suggest that we invite Honorable Lee to, you know, brief us on his proposal. Thank you for being in time, and you are helping us to do, you know, waiting while doing the work. Over to you, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to, and good morning to the members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to address you and to state my case. Let me at the outset say that the DA believes that it is very unfair towards the other sporting codes that boxing is singled out and that its administration is fully subsidized by the government or by the state. As far as the DA is concerned, that just as with all the other sporting codes like SARU, that's rugby, Cricket South Africa and SAFA, as well as ASA Athletics, boxing must be run independently without interference from the state. The government must rid itself of the burden of boxing South Africa and for the following reasons. One, boxing South Africa will receive 2 million rand from the taxpayer this year, but in addition to the money it receives every year from the state, it is a regular receiver of bailout. That's boxing South Africa phoning Chairperson. Of bailouts for a range of financial disasters. Secondly, Boxing South Africa, the only sporting federation to be constituted by an act of parliament, has been plagued by scandals relating to either mismanagement of funds or internal infighting, all of which have hindered organizational stability since its formation in 2001, I think. So much so that in 2007, the then Minister of Sport and Recreation called the organization a nuisance, and last year the current minister said it continues, and I quote, it continues to be the Achilles heel of our work. Thirdly, Boxing South Africa's administrative capacity is in shambles. It still is failing to get basic administrative functions right, such as ensuring that purse monies to boxers are paid on time. Purse monies must be deposited into Boxing South Africa's account 14 days prior to a boxing tournament, yet evidence shows that this has not been the case for some time. Fourthly, on two occasions within a space of 4 months, purse monies for boxers were not made within the required time. Fifthly, last year, November, boxing tournament in the Eastern Cape had to be postponed for a day after international boxers refused to fight because of a promoter not having paid purse monies over. The sixth reason, a last-minute bailout by Eastern Cape saved Boxing South Africa becoming the laughingstock of the world. The international boxers were eventually paid a day later, but local boxers had to wait for a fortnight to get their payments. In March, purse monies for boxers in a boxing tournament in Secunda were deposited a day prior to the fight, that, as they call the day of the weigh-in. The seventh reason, Boxing South Africa has been hit by internal fighting. In December 2008, three board members, namely, and the names are Sodo, Sika, and Mr. Baloyi, all resigned from the board barely a year after their appointment, all citing the chairperson of Boxing South Africa's autocratic management style as the reason for their departure. The eighth reason is Boxing South Africa is currently dependent on the state, on state allocations from the Department of Sport and Recreation to manage its affairs, as it has been without a sponsor for some time now. Apart from this, some of its revenue comes from the license and sanction fees. And the ninth reason, they have been losing its major sponsors since 2006. Vodacom, Old Buck, and Distel all did not renew the sponsorship with a combined total of more than 2.3 million rand during the year, and the reason was for undisclosed reasons, and we know the reasons. It was for because of mismanagement, because nobody wants to be associated with a failing institution, which Boxing South Africa is. It is for these reasons, chairperson and friends, that the DA believes it is time for the state to rid itself of this inefficient organization and force it to stand on its own feet. We are therefore introducing a private members' bill to scrap it and allow it to be recreated under its own management, as in the case for all other sporting codes. Chairperson, finally, the DA thinks that the time has come for boxing to be given to the boxers and boxing promoters of this country. The sooner it is done, the better for boxing in South Africa. And then, Chairperson, I have a copy, and I hope you have a copy of the bill. And if I could address the memorandum, it says there that it is hereby notified that the introduction of a bill in terms of section 734, read with section 762 of the Constitution, will be made. This memorandum contains one, particulars of the proposed legislation, the objectives of the proposed legislation, and thirdly, an indication of the financial implications of the proposed legislation, and an indication of whether such implications may be a determining factor in the consideration of the proposed legislation. The required legislation is set out herein, and we also have the particulars of the proposed legislation. The objectives of the proposed amendments are: boxing is the only South African sporting code whose powers and functions are laid out in terms of national legislation. All other sporting codes are self-regulated, and the legislation governing the institution is therefore an anachronism. Furthermore, the establishment of Boxing South Africa in terms of legislation places an obligation on the state to fund it on an ongoing basis, as well as to provide additional financial support when it encounters financial difficulties. The expenditure is unwarranted. If the state money is to be provided to boxing, the state should be in a position to provide such funding on the basis of a sound decision based on financial and performance grounds, rather than being compelled to. And the financial implications are that the bill will result in a saving to the fiscus of an amount of approximately 2.3 million rand a year. That is the memorandum, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable. Honourable members, I'm sure, as usual, what we'll do now, we will pose clarity-seeking kind of questions to be clarified, so that when we deliberate, we have got a clear understanding of the reasons behind the proposal. Any question? Honorable Pretorius, Kellyanne, Sosibo, and yeah, in that order.
Yeah, I'll leave the question.
So if you can, seize the other one of Honorable Lee.
Sure. And my colleague here will ask the other question, which I think we all will ask, and that is why was it necessary in the first instance to have such a commission, but I will skip that one. If I can refer Mr. Lee to the long title of the current act, I'm trying to understand what the consequences will be for boxing if this thing is repealed. The original idea of the act was, amongst others, to ensure the effective and efficient administration of professional boxing in the Republic, and I think it indicated to us that there is no such thing as efficient administration in the current boxing setup. Secondly, to recognize amateur boxing, to create synergy between professional and amateur boxing, to establish a boxing commission, to promote interaction between associations and of boxers, managers, promoters, etc., and to provide some methods connected therewith. So my question is, what will the effect be on boxing generally if there is no act regulating the interest of boxing?
It is really a simple answer. You know, before this act, we had the tap-tap Macatinis of this world, we had Mike Weir, we had all these people, top boxers in the world, not only in South Africa, in the world. I was talking about a golfer and not a boxer, Charlie Weir, could see it. I mean, black and brown, white boy, we had top boxers in South Africa. Since this act, what happened to the boxers and to boxing in South Africa? Everybody sort of disappeared. In other words, we don't really need an act to have good boxers. We need dedicated sports boxing personalities or boxing administrators, or sports administrators to get good sports people. And therefore, an act is not needed to really get boxing or any other sport off the ground. If you look at sports not being regulated or administered by the state, look at rugby. Look at cricket. We are champions in rugby. We are the champions in cricket. We are champions in different codes without having a law. And therefore, I believe that without this law, and if we can get dedicated people back into boxing again, then boxing will flourish again. So it won't have a negative effect on boxing in South Africa.
Honorable Kellyanne, was it Sosibo or Kellyanne? Mm-hmm. Honorable Kellyanne.
Chair, I wanted to actually ask the same question, but just slightly differently slanted, and that was, if it is understood that there will be a saving to the state, do you foresee that, how do you foresee that the state will still support the development of amateur boxing, you know, the foundation, the schooling, etc., etc.? How do you foresee that, and how does it work in the other sporting codes?
Well, thanks, Chairperson. Sorry for not putting my mic off. Chairperson, thanks for the question. In all other, subsidies are made to all the other different sporting codes. A subsidy is also given to the overarching body of sport in South Africa. And that is how it is distributed, you understand? But I think that because in boxing itself, we have sort of bureaucrats running boxing. It's not people that's really interested in boxing. It's a bureaucrat, the man behind a desk that is running boxing. And he's not really interested in boxing. And therefore, I think that if you give boxing back into the hands of the, support them, yes, of course you can support them, as we support other development programs. I think then we will get boxing off the ground again. So yes, support must be given, but you know, straight to the boxers and to help the teachers to identify boxers again, as in the olden days.
Honourable Cecil.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Lee, are you saying boxing should not be regulated? And also, what I want to know, are you saying it's not been subsidized? And also, you mentioned that it's losing its sponsors. What is the reason?
Thanks, Chairperson. No, I'm not saying that it's not subsidized. In fact, it is subsidized. It's not only subsidized, it's really run by the state, fully subsidized. Other sporting codes are partly subsidized by the state. This one is fully subsidized and sort of organized by the state. That's the difference between rugby and boxing, right? Then the other question was, should it be subsidized? Yes, it should be. But development of boxing must be subsidized. It must go to the boxers and not to a bureaucrat who must decide. You understand? Mm-hmm. And the final question was very important, but I didn't pin down the question. That
the
sponsors. You see, Chairperson, sponsors want to be associated with success stories. Boxing South Africa is a big failure, and that is why people are running away from boxing. They don't want to be seen with people that cannot organize. Do you think they want to be seen? As I've said, boxing tournaments are cancelled. We always have discrepancies there. Do you think that they want their product to be associated with such failures? For that reason that they are running away from the sport. They support other sports, yes. Rugby, they're sponsored. Cricket is sponsored. Soccer, they've got their sponsorship. But the failures in sport in South Africa, sponsors are running away from them. And it's the same case is with Athletic South Africa. Because of the controversies, that is why people stay away and shy away from different sporting codes.
Honourable Jaya, then you'll follow Honourable Fish.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it's not very often that this committee is asked to repeal legislation. Usually we add to the statute books more and more or new bills. So this is quite an unusual situation. But it's also based on the fact that there's a law governing boxing, the only sporting code in South Africa. Now, my question is to the member, why, if he knows, why was this act that we want to repeal now, why was it kind of added to the statute books in the first place, in the first instance? It's an unusual situation. The other doesn't exist for the other sporting codes. Why boxing? Why did this happen?
First of all, Chairperson, if I may say, you know, at the time I wasn't a member of the sports committee when it happened. Yeah, because in principle I would have been against it. Secondly, Chairperson, the reason why is, just, may I, Chairperson, repeat the question? why is this now needed, sort of? Why did it happen?
Why was this law necessary?
The law was sort of to assist the development of boxing in South Africa. That basically was it. To protect the promoters and the boxers. That's really the reason for the law. But you see, you don't need a law to protect rugby players, soccer players, soccer bosses, or any person. You understand? Why is it needed in boxing? Same thing with development. It is happening in all the other codes except in boxing. And why is it needed? It's not really needed. This law is not needed in South Africa, Chairperson. And you know the other important thing, my friend there will know. You see, the sporting codes, the international sporting codes, they frown at state intervention in sport. The Olympic Committee, the FIFA, them, they don't really want us to meddle in sport, you understand? And therefore, I think we are sort of infringing on the international laws too by having this law. I think we are on the edge, on the brink here when it comes to that.
Honorable Fischer.
You know, in sport, in particular, in sport generally, you expect that it has a role in molding the values of a society, like sport in general. Children, you put children in sport, you are correcting them from going wrong, doing wrong things in society. There was a problem at one time in boxing, especially in America, and it influenced other countries. This question of mafia interference in sport. Like they were literally controlling the mafias in America. And to the extent that some of them were just untouchable, it was very difficult to take them off. Yeah. Where they were, if there's a match between two boxers, they will influence that one boxer must just forfeit. Yeah. So that they win, even if he is a favorite boxer to win. So this thing continued for quite a number of years, many in fact decades to continue in America. Then I think perhaps the main cause why
I'm sure, Honorable Fischer, you are not losing the principle that we are not yet deliberating.
Okay.
I hear you are bringing facts. We wanted clarity seeking kind of for now.
Yeah, yeah.
So you will reserve those for
when
we are dealing with the issue.
Okay.
Are you covered? Or you?
Well, in a way, I was trying to answer some of the questions.
No, you will answer them. When your turn comes, you will answer them. No, thank you very much. Honorable Pretorius.
Person, could I just expound on what the Honorable Fischer was just saying? You know what, there was this man called Donald King. He had my name, Donald King. Don King. He was really the Don, as in the mafia language. But again, Chairperson, that illustrates another point why we don't need this law for people to flourish in boxing. The richest sports people in the world are boxers. The richest sport people, Muhammad Ali, all those people, they are made people. And there are many different weights and different categories. They are the champions, and they are multi-million and billionaires. So, and they are free. They don't have laws. And therefore, you don't need laws to get rich in boxing.
Chair, thank you. Just for clarity, I see the figure of 2.3 million is mentioned as what the saving would be. I presume then that is the amount
that is
spent by government on boxing. If I look at the act, I'm asking this question because I suspect that the bulk of that money goes to salaries, probably. I'm not sure how it's been. Because there must be appointed a boxing commission, first of all, and those commissioners, seven of them, can get honoraria with respect to the services and certain allowances. And then there must be appointed a chief executive officer of Boxing South Africa, and he has the power then to appoint any staff member which he feels is required, and those people must be remunerated in line with the officials of the public service, which are quite lucrative salaries. So am I correct in saying then that the bulk of the money goes to salaries of staff, and sort of what percentage would you say would that be?
Chairperson, I cannot say what the percentage is, but yes, the fact is that the bulk of the money goes to staff and salaries. You know, and what is also important, Chairperson, that as I've said, this bill, or the law was passed, I think, in 2001. Since then, Chairperson, they haven't had one unqualified report, Auditor General's report. All the years, we've been struggling to get these people in line. Basic small things to be done. And that is why they were called by the minister as a nuisance, and he called them some other funny names too. Because he was also at his wit's end about boxing South Africa shares.
Thank you. It looks like you are satisfied. The charges, two, if not one. The contradictions that I'm picking in here. You said the act was promulgated, amongst other, to look at the developmental of boxings and others. And at the same time, you are saying, ever since the promulgations of this act, developments have been fading away off the picture. I wanted you to look at the two to say which one then it makes sense in one another.
Chairperson, you see, before this act, you had boxing and boxing people involved in the sport. You had ex-boxers involved in the sport, in the development of the sport. You know, at the time, I think it was Judge Kloppers who was the president of boxing in South Africa. And we had a number of other people around him that really they were interested in boxing in South Africa and in the boxers. In other words, we had boxing sports administrators. But then in 2001, it was shifted to a bureaucrat who sat behind a desk person who didn't really know and understand boxing. And they were supposed now to run the sport. But they never went out into the field outside chairperson. They remained in their offices, and they never got involved. They never made their hands dirty. In other words, the day that it switched from boxing promoters and boxing administrators to bureaucrats, that is the day that development sort of stopped. And since then, chairperson, we didn't and we couldn't reduce the talent that we really had in the past. No, I remember there was a time when I went fishing on Saturdays. Then I took my little transistor with me to fishing because I didn't want to miss Tap Tap Marcantini's boxing match, all these other guys boxing. Those days are past, chairperson. We don't have those boxers around anymore. It's Baby Jake and all of them.
I'm sure we'll look at it. I haven't heard what exactly I thought I'll get to say why development was then going down. Is it because this law with the bureaucracy, the cause? Why do we then associate this law with the failure for us to develop?
This law created the expectation, chairperson. Sorry, were you still? I'm sorry. This law created the expectations things will be done for us now. And that's why the development, the promoters and the other people in boxing sort of administrators, they sort of opted out because they were now a legal body to do this. And this legal body called Boxing South Africa failed them miserably. Because they weren't involved in, and interested really in boxing. They were bureaucrats, chairpersons, sitting behind the desk.
Finally, of course, much of your argument is based on incapability of the structure that is looking at boxing South Africa itself, the bureaucracy that you're calling.
Yeah.
If you, for argument's sake, we are then saying tomorrow we are putting capable men and women in there, will you still stick to the repealing of the act?
Chairperson, there's another important reason that perhaps you miss. I think this is a very
I wanted this area of the, you know,
mismanagement,
failure, qualified and what have you.
Yeah.
If we put capable, you know, will you still argue the way you are arguing? I wanted to get it in that.
Yeah, regard. I will argue the same way, and I want to tell you why, Chairperson. I think it's unfair to single out boxing. It's unfair towards the other sporting codes, towards the other sportsmen of this country. Why single out boxing, Chairperson? You know, the sport that really needs assistance now is athletics in this country of ours. It's also in a shambles, it's a mess. It has no money. And therefore, they also have a reason to say to, why don't we have a Athletic South Africa? Oh, yeah, we already have one. But it's one that is self-regulated. So there is, you know, the thrust of my argument really is that it's also very unfair because it singles out one sporting code, Chairperson, and forget about the rest.
Honorable Pretorius, as you comes in, if we were to say, instead of repealing, let's regulate all the sporting code, what will be your opinion?
My party is totally opposed to that, Chairperson.
Honorable Bruton.
Just for clarity, also, when you repeal this act, there will obviously be a void in a sense that you need some control. You can't have people operating as boxers without having getting a license or being approved as boxers for medical purposes and so on. And my colleague must assist me here. If I recall correctly, prior to this law, there was a thing called the Boxing Control Board, which was a self-regulating board of the sports.
Yeah.
So is your thinking that if this thing were to go, that boxing itself must organize itself by again creating such a body that would internally control their own affairs?
Chairperson, all sporting codes have international sort of rules. And in those rules are there sort of to sort of regulate them sort of selves. And it, safety is very important in boxing, and therefore they have rules to make sure that the boxers are safe. They have institutions in boxing, and therefore, if for South Africa then to be part of the world body or to be take part in the world on the world stage, they will have to conform and they will have to abide by all those rules. And if that institution is called the control body or whatever it's called, then they will also have to have one in South Africa.
Okay. Or covered. Honorable Sosibo.
Honorable, he says earlier on, boxing is in shambles. In what way? Now you are saying the only sport that needs that is in shambles also is athletes. In what way is this boxing? Because I understand you are saying now it's only the athletes.
No, boxing is in shambles for the last 9 years since the inception of this act. It has received, if you read the quality, the Auditor General's report, for the last 9 years they've received unqualified, in other words, qualified reports for the last 9 years. And it's not I that saying it, the Auditor General that is saying it. That comes from me. Yes.
Honorable Mdaki.
my apologies for coming late. Person, I had a problem, serious problem this morning. Much as I came late, I heard Honorable saying that he will still argue even if we put capable structure. So if we put the structure that has capacity, what are you going to argue about? Or else, if you can clarify further, because I have a problem if we can put a capable structure that there is no point of arguing now. So if you can clarify further. Thank you.
Chairperson, I must then repeat myself. You know, it's good that we have all women speaking about boxing here. Muhammad Ali's daughter is also a boxer. Yes, Chairperson, as I've said, the other very important reason is that this law is very sort of unfair because it discriminates. It singles out boxing. It forgets about all the other sporting codes. You don't have a law for athletics. Neither do you have a law for rugby. Not for cricket. But for any other code, table tennis, tennis. They regulate themselves. They must finance themselves. They must finance their administration themselves. It's for that reason that I think that it's unfair to do this for boxing and not for the other codes, and many of them are also suffering.
I think I want to believe that we have exhausted clarity-seeking questions before we can get attempt into getting into deliberations. I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much for coming and present this to us. It has helped us to be in a better off than yesterday. When we will be deliberating, we would then understand why are you proposing or what you are proposing to us. We will then be, from time to time, keep you informed, including the last, you know, logical conclusion of the committee. We will abreast you and thank you very much again.
Thanks ever so much, Chairperson. Thanks very much, colleagues.
Sure. Honorable Pretorius, thank you for bringing him in. thank you once again, honorable members. You would recall that we were supposed to have been starting with the deliberations on the presidential pardon proposals that we received from both selves and delete. But we couldn't on the basis of quorum. I'm glad to inform you that ever since we have been joined by two honorable members, we are now having the quorum and we can start with the business.
Chair, just to say that the reason why I was 2 minutes late was that I went to the East Wing, to the third floor. Actually I had to come back all the way. My office is upstairs, one floor.
Oh, you are lost while you are residing here. I thought you are coming from the other side. Thank you anyhow. I think we can start. Who else wanted to kick start? Now the time is now. Do we want to retain Section 84J1J, or do we want to remove it? As per the proposals of the honorable members that has made mentions of, the platform is open for, I'm sure in terms of the constitution, it's section 84.2J, which dealt with the pardons of the offenders by the state president. The head of state, I must say, not state president, because we don't have a state president in South Africa. We've got a president. Let's start. Are you ready, Honorable Kellyanne?
Chairperson, yes. I was just wondering about this matter, because again, it's one of those those issues. You know, if we're looking at our interrogation of the issue of the Boxing Act repeal, proposed repeal or not this morning, again we find ourselves in a situation that we as members are not fully informed of exactly how other bodies, sport bodies, are regulated. Now similarly, if we look at the proposals, and the one is a straight approach of an amendment to the Constitution, just a deletion of that one section. The other one was to say you have to regulate it. And now if we look at practice in other countries, it is very interesting to read those countries with a sort of a monarchy or history of a monarchy have also moved towards regulating the unfettered power of the previous monarch to some extent, to make provision for modern democratic principles, to say that it's maybe not the right thing to do to have an individual, irrespective of who the individual is, to just take decisions without having been given guidance on the basis of the minister responsible or a parole board. Well, we have a parole board in this case, a board that would consider on the basis of specific unbiased principles, is this one suitable for having been to be granted amnesty, etc. Now, I just feel that maybe it's one of those cases that we can, as a committee, say, let us investigate this further. But it's not our primary responsibility. I read through the Department of Justice presentation to us, and I was thinking it contains interesting views, etc., and also listed some constitutional case law. But I do believe that it's perhaps necessary for such a committee to look at it, to say, if we remove it, because the comment was that the presentation by Mr. Self was not entirely focused enough, because it actually also requires a constitutional amendment. That's how I understand it. Now, what we're saying is, if we are saying, yes, it's necessary to limit unfettered power of the head of state, then we're saying, how do we do it? But that is not our role. Now, what we're also saying is not that, yes, it must be removed. All I believe we should say is, should we not just pass it on, the two pieces of proposed legislation, to the Justice and Constitutional Committee and say, have a look at it, you're best positioned to look at this. Once they decide in principle that it has some merit, it could be forwarded to the Constitutional Review Committee or to a committee to consider how do you then take on board the issue of not having a void, because you have to provide for that function. Or if you want to curtail the powers of the head of state, how do you do it? We must bear in mind that in some of the countries that have retained that in the modern democracies, their heads of state are elected directly. For instance, in France, there's a presidential election. We don't have that system in South Africa. So it is something that I believe needs further scrutiny to see how do you make it compatible, the unfettered power. How do you make it compatible with the democratic principles in our country? And was that not perhaps something that slipped in through the constitutional process that should have actually been further scrutinized? Because if I look at where it originates from, there's uncertainty about the 1661 constitution, how it came about, that it came through that door, etc. And then it came in the 93 constitution, and now it's time for us to just look at that. I just believe it is important for us to evaluate that based on the principle that we do not have a directly elected head of state. We have an indirectly elected head of state, and I think it warrants further investigation. Thank you.
handkerchief.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mtata.
Chairperson, I'm very, very worried about this this discussion. I'm sure we nearly forget that this is the president of this country and our country. Now we are comparing this country with other countries, you name them, they were listed here, or they are listed here. Whereas everybody here in this committee agree that this country is a living example to whatever, to everything. So we cannot follow other countries' issues, whereas South Africa is an example compared with other countries. And our president is not the president for the executive or the executive president. He is the president for this country. So I should think, Chairperson, it will be a disgrace and an embarrassment to strip the powers of the state president. I don't know how are we going to do that. Number three, Chairperson. What I think, Chairperson, as this committee, we must suggest or encourage the president that at a certain time that we all know as the parliament, not as the committee, there must be offenders that must be pardoned. Thank you. Not just to strip the power.
Meeting, please, so that we allow every member to deliberate freely.
No, what I was totally against of Chairperson is to strip the powers of the president. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my point is really a point of procedure. This committee has certain prescribed responsibilities when we consider proposed legislation in front of us. One thing it's not to get into the merits and discuss the actual substance of proposed legislation. That is the prerogative of the portfolio committee, the appropriate portfolio committee. We just have to answer certain questions, technical questions, and once we've satisfied that these conditions have been met, then we refer it to the appropriate portfolio committee. So we should not get into substantive debates around the merits of legislation. That's really not our role, and then we're getting too big for our shoes as a committee there. We've made that mistake before, and we should just be careful that we, you know, stick to our mandate.
Honourable Fika. Yeah, fortunately for me, I've been in the correct relevant portfolio committee of correctness service for many years, about 15 years. Now, here it is pointed out clearly that a president, before he can take any action, and pardon me, a person, he has to consult the Minister of Justice. Because it's justice, it's the courts that sentence a person to a number of years. And they evaluate first the offense, and then they say this person ought to stay in prison for so long because of the seriousness of the offense he has committed. Now, here it's also pointed out that before a president can take any decision, he has to consult the minister and the victims.
is very important question of victims. Because the victims are the people who have suffered because of the death or because of the offense that has happened to them, whatever. Now, then I consider there's enough protection of abuse of power by any president if he has to consult first. Because the decision now that is going to be taken by the Minister of Justice, perhaps even the Minister of Justice will have to consult the parole board about that. He can not just take a decision without having consulted. It means we're going to get the advice from the parole board and then take it back now. Justice say, no, this person has at least reformed, has at least been rehabilitated enough, is a changed person, and therefore he can not commit another offense again when he goes after. I think that's how I look at saying that now. I don't think there is any problem in there is any need of changing the existing law. That's what I'm saying. Because there's enough protection for power by any president. That's what I'm saying.
Chair, thank you very much. I will just make a short comment and then you must excuse me, please. I need to run for another committee. I think, Chair, our position is clear that we believe we shouldn't go into the technical detail or the content of the proposal, because this is both of them are highly technical and complex issues, which I certainly don't feel comfortable of making a decision without having heard many more, much more input from experts from all sides. For example, constitutional experts. I suspect people like Professor DeVos from UWC might have very strong views on this, but I don't think it's this committee's function to call all those expert witnesses to us. That should be the function of the portfolio committee, as Ms. Killian correctly pointed out also. So to summarize in my view, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of my colleague here as well, we would prefer to err on the safe side and say, let's pass this on to the appropriate committee who will do a proper investigation on the contents of the proposals. If it then is found that both proposals, or one of them perhaps are acceptable and the other one is not, or both are not acceptable, then so be it. But I don't think at this stage we are in a position to give a considered view on whether these proposals are necessary or not necessary. We've drafted certain questions which we work according to and to determine whether technically we comply, and I would prefer that we follow that route basically also in this case. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Sasu, but before that, I think now that this thing of saying we should not talk to or try to deliberate into the substantive part of the proposal, I think it's something that I should put it in perspective, that the presentations that we have received required us to apply our minds in terms of the guideline that we have provided you to say, look at these areas. Are we saying the proposal before us is stepping into the the constitutionality of the law that is governing us? Are we saying the proposal before us is preempting what is likely to be done by the other part of organ of state, in particular state and so on, and government? Are we then saying that the proposal has got some elements of replicating what is already existing? And for us to arrive there, we need to talk to these things. We cannot just say yes, no. We need to look into what you have. To your understanding should come clear to say, from where I am, I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, therefore I arrive at this particular recommendation. From where I'm sitting, I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, therefore I recommend that let's do 1, 2, 3. We cannot just say okay, we have received pass. We are not. I'm sure Parliament does not expect us to do that. We need to apply our mind in whatever we do. And when we said let's pass, let's not pass, it should be based on facts that you are putting on the ground, Honourable Sosibi.
Thank you, Chair. Where I'm sitting, I think the powers to pardon people is just the prerogative of the president here in South Africa. And as a comrade, Fitler, has just mentioned that he doesn't do this on his alone. He just consults before doing anything. But at the end of the day, we must know that it's his prerogative. I don't think we need to delay because to say we are going to apply changes, amendments, or refer it back, because we once had a briefing by the Department of Justice. Yes. Why should we refer back to it to that committee again? I think we have to just take a decision, because truly speaking, I don't think we have to keep on comparing with other countries. It's good to compare, but with us here, I think we have to leave it as is to the prerogative of the president.
Any further? It looks like there are two views here. One is to say let's refer to the matter to the Portfolio Committee on Justice, of course with reasons forwarded, and the other ones are saying there's no need for us since the head of state has been, you know, adequately given the responsibility as part of his prerequisite to pardon offenders. There are only these two views, unless I've heard differently from where you are. Those are the two views, and my input thereof will be that I'm sure we understand that we are not referring to this section of the Constitution, not understanding that it is when the president acted as a head of state, not as a head of government. He acted in this regard as a head of state, which are the constitutional principles that have been allocated in section 84 of the Constitution, 1 and 2 up to K. It speaks to the role of the president as a head of state, not a head of government. And obviously, because the president, in terms of section 84 of the Constitution also, is required to set up a cabinet in which he will from time to time consult members when matters are related to their competency, despite the fact that he has got already been given, you know, his responsibility and the role by section 84. I think in this regard, we may not rule out that the decisions of the president will from time to time be subjected to the advices by the cabinet minister who are responsible for that. And I guess this particular section, we should not confuse it with the parole or whatever law that are being charged with the correctional services. It's completely constitutional obligation.
charged the president as a head of state to discharge, you know, the particular functionality around himself. The fact that the role that we're talking about, it's one way or another seem to be related to the role that has been practiced by the monarch for, you know, quite some time. It's a fact because many of our roles that we have assumed as government, we have taken them from, you know, leaders that they were there before the law, I mean the existing type of, you know, system are in place. Therefore, I don't think we should rule it out basically purely on the basis that it has been practiced by the monarch. If it was for a good cause, I think nothing wrong, to take it along with the democratic, you know, systems that we are living in it. I wanted to check here. My understanding from the submissions that you have made are saying, except the one that came from Killian, of referring, you are saying there's no need to allow the proposed amendment of the constitution, no, to regulate how the president should pardon people. Can I check whether my understanding is the same as yourself? Is there any different view on that? Honourable.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to answer that specific question. I actually want to talk more and respond to what you've said and the role of this committee. Now, I've got here certain questions that have been agreed by this committee that should act as a guide when we consider legislation coming before us. And I won't read everything, we've all seen it, but I just, for example, one or two. What this committee has to ask itself is this...
Sure, the paper you are reading, Honourable Dreyer, it's not yet been even adopted by the committee.
Okay, it's guidelines.
It's still something that we said read, but we are investing into. The one that you may rather, I advise you to use, is the facts, you know, sheet, because it's the one that guided us to arrive where you are seeing the question, which has been adopted as a working tool of the committee.
To help us,
but also equally, more importantly, I'm worried we may not conclude this matter. We are already out of time by 5 minutes. May we then park it, and then in the next meeting we'll take the discussion further. And I'm worried we may be offending Parliament by keeping on sitting.
I have to go in anyway, so I just want to make a concluding remark. So
no, don't conclude. You'll still be given opportunity. In fact, you'll then continue making a well-informed, concluding remark in the next meeting.
So I'm not speaking now.
Because time is not in our side. My apology, Honourable Members. It's not about me. It's about time. Okay? Thank you. Let's meet in the next meeting and take the discussion.
Just a quick question. Did anybody look at the questions to the department so that we could just approve that? And also just the fourth-term program. I didn't want to ambush you, but I just thought since we have a quorum, shouldn't we just...
Did you read it?
Yes.
Can of course, it is a legitimate request to say, why don't we take the very same paper that the Honourable Flowers was having it, to say, let's adopt it, so that we forwarded it to departments. The stakeholders that we require them the input.
These are the questions.
Yep.
Amended draft questions.
Exactly.
These are the amended draft questions, and then also there's an amended
program.
Yes, I've gone through it too. I have no problem with it, but I would like to propose it.
Seconda from Honourable Kellyan's proposal. Honourable Sosibo. Any objection? Nothing. Thank you. This will be then regarded as our working tool. Thank you.
And it is
the meeting is adjourned. Next meeting.